Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Carpcast. It's been a long journey to get from 1 to 4. It's been a few weeks and I'm quite enjoying it. What about you, Mark?
I am really enjoying it. You know, it's a lot more work than I thought, doing the planning and research, which I still need to learn a lot about. But it's a fun journey. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, there is a lot of work. I'll apologise now if we don't keep this every week, because of the amount of work involved. It's just the editing alone. I mean, last week's show was nearly 3 hours. If you imagine audio editing something that's 3 hours long, it probably takes 8-9 hours, 3 hours to go back over it and check it. Then, you know, you've got to go through it with a fine tooth comb. It's a hell of a lot of time. Probably our busiest time of year at the minute, with the Northern Angling show probably just over 2 weeks away now. So there's a lot of work, and we aim to keep them weekly, and hopefully we can, but accept our apologies if we don't.
Yeah, and this probably would have been out sooner, but I've just been away for a nice quiet week with the missus, and with no usable Wi-Fi connection for any recording. It was so I was sat now recording on Friday the 13th.
Did you get any fishing done while you were away?
I did, but no meaningful fishing. I mean, we're in a lodge at the side of a lake, and I was assured while I was down there the lake has done fish to over 30 pounds, which, you know, perked the ears up a touch. But where we were in the lodge, I had the rods out at the side for a while, but I knew it wasn't going to happen. When the other side of the lake, you know, the sun's hitting it, there's three great big beds of Norfolk reeds, and to be honest, if I could have made the effort and got up early in the morning and walked around there with the rods, but I was on holiday, there was a hot tub and I couldn't be bothered.
Can you fish from the hot tub with your receiver on the side?
I was.
That sounds like a plan. Yeah. There's a place up near us that's got some sort of log cabins on the side of a lake. It's actually a trout lake. It looks an amazing holiday. You get your own punt and electric motor and all the gear. They give you mountain bikes, all sorts. It looks really smart. And I've heard there's 250-pound carp in this lake, but the owner hates carp and carp anglers, which I don't blame him.
And he's obviously come across a few then.
Yeah, and I'm keeping it on the lowdown, but it's definitely on my poaching list.
You're keeping on the lowdown, putting it on a podcast that will be listened to by thousands, hopefully.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few thousand listeners to us already, so it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, we're well over 3,000, I think.
And lots of people seem to like it, especially Mr. Ting Tong. Ian McMillan, he says I've got a hypnotic voice, and he's got a voice crush.
Do you think you've got the sort of voice that could do that late night love show?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I like the thought of grown men going to bed listening to my dulcet tones.
As long as they're not listening to mine.
Since the last show, what have I done? I've done no fishing as yet. Last time we recorded, I'd just finished day one of a poker tournament, a really big one. Didn't have many chips going back the following weekend, which was the weekend, last weekend now. Is it that long since we recorded? Wow. And it went fairly well. I ended up making the final table. It'll be shown on Sky Sports 3 or 4 months' time, and ended up winning quite a chunk of money. Not the £200,000, hence the reason why there's a Carpcast 4. I'm not jetted off and bought me pad in Spain. But it was a nice chunk of money, and one that will be invested into the fishing community in the shape of a transporter van, which I've ordered. It's currently being converted into a camper. A friend of mine sells them, and he's got one half done. So I went down there and checked it all, plotted the stuff that I want, but I bought an awning for the side of it. It converts into like an extra bedroom, and speakers go in the side of it, and I'm pimped this year for fishing when it arrives. Hopefully I have it in time for the angling show, which is the 28th, 29th of March, and probably sit there because we'll use it for PR and stuff, get some signs made for the side of it. But yeah, my 18 bus, it'll be.
You're not going to get a personal plate as well?
Noddy. N0DDY. That's about, yeah, just because I've got the transport to go fishing, I mean, I'm going to catch anything when I get there. But it was quite a decent week for me. Being as the part, you know, we announced it on the podcast, didn't really have any expectations, and then won a chunk of money. I'm just going to use my one time to do that again, because I was actually in the same position yesterday. I played a day one of a comp. It's probably got £60,000 for the win. I made it through to day two, which is tomorrow. So if I announce it here, by the time you hear this, you may never hear me again. But no, I'm going to use my Carpcast Run Good to announce it again. I'm not in a very good spot. I've not got many chips, but it'd be nice if we could win some money. Let's win all the money. That's what we want.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not in it to be runner-up, even though that's nice. Go for the big one.
Yeah, runner-up's probably 40k, so I wouldn't say no.
You know, that'd be like going to St Ives and saying, I'll settle for Bob's Linear. Everybody wanted the lady. Go for the big one.
That is true. That is true, but it's always nice catching fish. Something which I haven't done for quite some time, so I'm desperate to go out fishing, but it's probably going to be to christen the new van now, I think, next time I go. Somewhere nice and easy, we can park up alongside, like maybe the A1 Pits or something, we could get a social on there.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think there's, off the top of my head, there's a small section of pit 3 and 4 you can't drive around, and that is it. You know, the pits you'll be interested in with the bigger fish, the more of a challenge, 5 and 6, you can get all the way around. And some of the best swims are where parking's limited because the caravanners can't get down there.
So let's catch up on what's been going on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Oh, the first thing I've got right here is Angler's Paradise all the way down there. That's done its first £50 carp.
Wow. I don't know anything about Angler's Paradise. I know Nathan from Cromwell goes there quite a bit and loves it, but I didn't realise there was anything that big in there. I know there's a specimen lake. It's not got many carp in.
Yeah, what I've got here, it's the Cracking Carp Lake. That's Cracking with a K. It was complex and county record caught by a fella called Carl Cliff Brown from Paynton. You know, I've got here, it was up at 6 a.m. on the second day of his session. And about 20 past 7, he saw some movements in the margin about 60 yards away. About 20 minutes later, a fish breached. You've got to love that word, breached. It's different from your usual boshed.
Yeah.
So he decided on a different plan of attack. Two bits of fake corn popped up over some 40mm boilets and a handful of pellets. Then about 5 past 10, he had a single bleep, hooked a fish. Only a 10-minute fight, then the fish was in the net and bang on £50 it weighed.
It's a chunk. I've seen so many 50-pound. I mean, we're only in March now, middle of March. I've seen so many 50-pounders out this year. It's untrue. The Snake Pit Common was out this week at £51 on the nose, I think. A guy called Greg that caught it. I don't have any details, really, apart from just what I saw on Facebook. In fact, the lad that posted it, I think he was there for the photographing, a lad called Carl Hall. It's got Carl Hall Carp Angler. I don't know him or anything. But it sparked up kind of an interesting debate. He's deleted the post now, but it was one of those, that ultimate question of my target fish has been caught. When you're fishing a lake where there's like only one fish that kind of everyone's after, what do you do when it gets caught? You know, do you pull off the lake? Do you carry on fishing it?
I think that's one of the best times to fish.
Yeah.
Personally?
Yeah, they do drop their guard once they've dropped, you know, once they've kind of, well, there's certain fish, I think, are known for coming out again. The lady from St. Ives used to come out twice, regular.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I do remember, this is when I used to read, you know, Big Carp magazine regular. One year, Heather the Leather had not been out at all, then came out twice in a day or two.
Yeah, they do.
Even a rare one.
Yeah, sometimes knocks them off guard. And you have to realise, like, the rare ones, when they get caught, it's because they've dropped the guard or wanted to feed enough to get themselves caught at that particular moment. And, you know, whatever that urge was that caused it, you know, might still be there if they're doing it because it's the time of year or the weather conditions are mint or they're really hungry, whatever. You know, just because they got caught doesn't mean that they're not still really hungry or the weather's still ace or whatever.
Yeah, I remember, I can't remember who it was who was telling me, but again, going back to the St Ives fat lady, she'd been out in the morning, yeah, in the afternoon she's busy taking floaters, filling herself again.
Yeah, I've heard a few stories like that. Sometimes if you know where fish go to sulk as well, you can go and like, you know, there's certain areas of LA where fish go to sulk, like the Back Bay on Pit 2. There's a few fish used to go in there once they got caught. And if you know where they are, you know, where their sulking area is, you can sometimes go and catch them from there. I mean, all the Yateley fish on the car park, they used to go sulk in the weed. There's like sort of a big unfishable area underneath the climbing tree. And whenever fish got caught, you'd either find them in the snag swim, in like the very first peg where the car park is. Under the snags in there was their favourite sulking area, or they, once the weed was up, they were up the other end. And just knowing those areas on the lake. This is, we've just been discussing zigs a lot, so I'm going off at a tangent here. But for me, the key to catching the carp in a lake when you're big fish angling is working the lake out, is understanding, you know, where they go when it's hot, when they go when they're sulking, where they're rubbing spots. You know, like a lot of the big fish I've caught, I could explain the habits of a lake to somebody else who'd never been to the lake, you know, somebody who just started fishing the lake, as has happened many times, you know, when friends of mine have gone to a new lake and they've asked me what I know about the lake. I could literally make them catch the fish, if you know what I mean, by telling them what you've learned. If you're just sat there with a zig kind of ambushing them, like, you've learned nothing about the lake. And for me, the hunting, the solving the jigsaw puzzle, working, putting the pieces together is part of the hunting bit of that fish for me. Zig fishing takes all that away. It's like you're not learning anything, you're just sticking that out in the middle for an opportunist. You know, you could be in the middle and let that fish swim up and down, and on one day it's going to see it and yam it, or usually foul luck it, as seems to be the case with these days.
Yeah, I know there's one or two places actually banned zigs because of the foul looking potential of a few of them, but then again, I know, well, rumour has it that one or two big fish captures that have been reported have been foul looked fish with chods.
Well, yeah, that happens as well, and I know quite a few fish have been getting foul hooked on Christchurch. That's been fishing well. My friend Dave, actually, Dave Wilson, had a decent hit out there last week. He spoke to me, had three fish. There's nothing else had been caught. What he was doing, he fished the zigs a lot closer to the bottom. He was like on the, where Rob was explaining about the middle third being the kill zone. Yeah. He was kind of the bottom end of the middle third, or the top end of the bottom third, whichever way you want to look at it. Well, the reason why done that is because people have been foul, he'd heard of a couple foul hooked the week before, and he naturally assumed that if they're getting foul hooked that they're sitting lower in the water because they're obviously catching the line. Yeah. And he fished them lower, sort of 4 foot off the deck, something like that, and ended up having three, and they were all 20s, and he was saying to me, you know, I just need a bigger now to make it a really good session. Then on his last morning, literally everything packed up, rods in the water, it's gone, and he's had a 40 pound common.
Hey, well done, Dave.
Yep, it's a great result. But it, the fact that he mentioned that quite a few fish had been getting foul hooked. I know John Mack had a decent fish, he had one of the name fish out there, 46, I think, but he'd foul looked a couple before that, so I heard. And it does make you wonder how many fish, not casting any aspersions on John whatsoever, on every lake, you know, all these fish getting caught on zigs. If you catch the biggest fish in the lake and it is foul looked, are you gonna mention it? You know, the previous three you had a foul looked and then the next one isn't. Just happens to be the biggest one.
Yeah, that's something that nobody will ever admit to.
Of course not, no.
But we know what some certain people out there are like, and... It, without a doubt, it goes on.
Of course it goes on this, you know, the foul hooked to hooked fair and square in the mouth ratio on Ziggs, to, you know, on Ziggs is probably more foul hooked than there is caught properly. Although, I mean, I fish lower stock lakes as a rule, but I've probably had a dozen fish in my lifetime on Ziggs, and they've all been, I've not foul hooked one. Yeah, of course. But I don't fish heavily stocked lakes where there's lots of fish swimming about all the time. You know, I'm talking about 30 carp in 18 acres.
Yeah, you know, I remember a conversation, again, going back to Christchurch, a conversation I had with Martin Pick some years back. This was back when we were fishing Pit 1 and he was on there. Yeah. And we got chatting about Ziggs. And he was saying this is after he's been up a tree watching him in the clear water. And he says the best way for actually getting a good hook hold was to fish the Zig, you know, a few inches lower than where they were in the water. So they've got to, if they want to suck it in, they've got to either suck it up or tilt slightly. Because he's watched them with it in the face, have just sucked and blown, and never got hooked.
Makes sense, yeah. I mean, obviously that's what Dave did. He obviously fished well. I don't think he foul hooked one. He had four fish. I don't think any of them were foul hooked. So, I mean, you just fish them on the surface and let the fish swim into them. You know, if you want to... It's basically like lure fishing.
We'll get a, you know, 20 mil pop-up and a treble on if we're going to do that.
For me, like I say, I'm still... the jury's out with Ziggs. I've used them and I catch on them. But I think for me, like, big fish... If I go to a well-stocked day ticket lake and I'm there for the crack for a couple of days and I just want to catch as many fish as I can, I'm going to fish any method possible. You know, I'm going to have a couple of rods on Ziggs if, you know, that's what the fish are getting caught on, because I'm there for enjoyment and I'm there to catch some fish. If I've gone to a syndicate lake, you know, that I'm going to be on for a year, two seasons, three seasons, however long it takes to catch most of the A team, I want to understand the lake. I want to work the lake out. And that's not saying I wouldn't put a Zig out some days if I think conditions dictate it.
So don't you see Zig fishing as part of that, working it out? What were the conditions where they're going to be susceptible to a Zig, you know, off the bottom? Because I just see it as another string to the bow.
So do I, definitely. And I would and have used them and caught fish. But I think they're actually so effective that I think you would catch more just using Ziggs. So why would you do any of the hard stuff? Like, if you're going to do that and set out to catch all the fish, then just fish Ziggs all the time.
Yeah, but there are days when that big low pressure comes in, there's a big warm southwesterly blowing, a bit of drizzle coming in, where all the fish are going to be on the end of the weed and I'm going to be ripping that bottom up. You know, your Zig 5 foot above them ain't going to do any good.
Yeah, like I say, I'm the jury's still out for me. I don't know how we've gotten to Ziggs from discussing them, a couple of 50 catches. But
yeah, we have gone off on a bit of a tangent, haven't we?
That's the beauty of a free-form podcast is we can do that. It's ours, so no one can tell us not to. We can do what we like. I'm still up for discussion. I use them. Got nothing really against them. But for me, the hunting bit is working the lake out, you know. And they always say with teaching, you know, if you understand something, anything, enough to explain it to somebody else, then you fully understand something, whether it's a subject or whether it's, you know, describing what the fish do on a lake in certain conditions. That most of the lakes I've worked out and had success on, we've sussed the lake out. We know, you know, I can not be at the lake and me and you can be gone. It's mother weather. Mother's going to get caught off.
Yeah, we still use that term now.
Yeah, mother weather, because that fish would always come out in big westerly winds off the low point type area or decoy.
Headland,
yeah, out the deep water on the end of a wind. And literally I've predicted that fish's capture so many times over the years, and it's just understanding why they do what they do, that for me is part of it. So just snagging them in a lucky opportunity as they're swimming past, it's the sense of achievement there, because you're still holding that fish up for the camera, but
yeah, the end result is the same as the fish in the album. I say it's another string to the bow, and right place, right time for any method.
There seems to be something else about Ziggs, a bit like floater fishing as well, that doesn't seem to kind of affect their normal bottom catches. If a fish comes out two or three times a year off the bottom, like, it might still come out two or three times a year off the bottom and still gets caught another three times on Ziggs these days. If you know what I mean, it doesn't seem to affect like that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there, but I'll be honest, it's not something I've really looked into. Although my, the last water I was, I did any real time on, there was me and occasionally the bailiff bream fishing, so there was nothing to compare it to anyway.
Yeah, I'm basing it on a sample size of very small. I could be completely wrong. All thoughts and opinions in the Carpcast are ours.
Yeah, not necessarily right.
Not necessarily, no. So, what else we got on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
On the net. New late record for Farlows. Is that a late you've ever been to?
Yes, I had a Boy of Leisure ticket back in the day. I used to be able to get a coverall ticket when I lived sort of near Watford. And I only fished it a few times. I was mainly fishing Rodney Meadow, which I fell in love with, which was on the same ticket. I intended to fish Farlows and then just loved Rodney Meadow so much I ended up spending the next year on there. But it's a cracking lake, but it hadn't done anything that big at the time. It had a few decent 30s.
Yeah, it's one called the Pretty One at 44.4 ounce, to one I called Adam Cheel or Chael.
I noticed on Facebook Rob Hughes was on there yesterday and had fish on Ziggs, actually. He only had 4 hours and I'd seen him bang a couple of rods out, put some pictures up and saying he was getting Ziggy with it, and he did have one an hour later.
Yeah, a nice 20-pound common, I saw that one.
Anything else been caught, was spotted?
Yep. One of our favourite venues, Cromwell's, chucked out a 43-pound called Rosie. Nice big mirror to Louis Bleasby. That was a pop-up over 5 kilo boilies.
That Rosie's a cracking fish. When I did some bailiffing on there a couple of years back, that fish was on the ascension. It kept coming out. It's a friendly one. It's an absolute peach of a fish as well. It's like really sort of orangey coloured, big deep Italian belly. It's a cracking looking fish, and it came out like when a few of the other big ones had kind of plateaued, it just kept getting bigger. Every capture was like, went from like 36, 37, 38, 39, it did 40, and it doesn't surprise me now that it's gone 43. And at what a time of year for fish to be doing the best ever weights as well. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we've had an up and down winter, but I don't think it's not been overly harsh, has it?
No.
The lakes haven't been frozen for weeks on end where the fish can go dormant and lose weight, burn up the fat reserves. But one or two of the, I say with all the 50s coming out, I think if these fish, they get through spawning okay, we could see some massive weights through the autumn.
Yeah, I totally agree. They're certainly getting bigger, and I mean, Cromwell, if you haven't been, it's an absolutely cracking lake. You won't find a better kept lake, a more pleasant lake to fish on in the country. It's beautiful the way they've looked after it, Nathan and Helen down there. And probably will be my first session this year, actually. I'll go and fly down there for a social with Nathan. I know he's running a club night at the Ashiana Indian up the road. He's tried to get us to DJ for, it's the weekend of our show, actually. I think it's on the 27th, the Friday night, his night. But I'll certainly be going in the future. I think me and Spenny will get a night's DJing and a couple of days fishing for social.
That sounds good.
Go and check it out, and I will be on there in the next couple of weeks, I think. And that Rosie, I'd love to catch it. It's a cracking fish, and there's
that will be. You say it's a friendly 40. That's my favourite type.
Yeah, and it's not the only 40 in there. There's a couple of others, probably 3 or 4, right time of year. And there's tons of 30s in there. It's probably 60 30s, and it's just beautiful. And I keep seeing pictures on Facebook of him doing the new pegs as well. All the pegs that weren't already mint are now mint.
Have you seen his contour map that they've had done of the lake?
Yeah. The only place I've fished before that is Eric's Willows Lake. They had it done, and it's amazingly accurate. Like, you can actually, if you print off, it's all done to scale, and there's an actual scale on the bottom of the map, and you can print off print it off onto an A4 bit of paper, cut the scale out, and you can actually measure the spots and then just wrap them out with wrap sticks. And it's, you can pick the bit on the paper you want to fish on. I want to fish in that hole there that's slightly deeper. It's dead on line with this on the opposite bank. You can measure it with this scale. You go, all right, it's 69 yards, and then wrap it out 69 yards, and bang, you're on the spot every time. And I see Cromwell's had it done as well.
Is that accurate then?
It's really, really
that is accurate. Impressive.
Yeah, and they do it with the boat, so I'm not. They must have GPS on the boat. I'm not. I know it takes 2 days. It's contourmapping.co.uk or something. I think I've seen their website. I've seen them advertising on Facebook, and it's not cheap. It's a few grand to have done, and the lake's shut for a couple of days because they're going up and down it, mapping it. So I'm assuming it's echo sounders and GPS. But they do it thoroughly because there's a few of the spots on Cromwell that I know that I've had a good look at their map, and it's exactly how you know what I've seen on there. It's looks like if I had a day ticket lake or any lake, I'd definitely have it done.
Yeah, it's something I'll certainly be looking at next time I'm down there. Is he because he's got the swim maps in each swim zone where you can and can't cast? Is he putting the contour maps in there as well?
I don't know if it's in each swim. I've definitely seen it overlaid. It would make sense to do that because he has maps in each peg anyway, so it'd make total sense to do that. I have seen a hybrid between the two maps, so it's like the old map with the swim markers put on top of the contour map. So he has got that. I'm guessing he has put them in every peg, but we'll find out in a week or two.
Yeah, it's got to be good. Knowing that your marker float work is actually quite accurate, and you see something like that and you think, I fished that spot.
Yeah, everyone talks about this bar down the middle, and I've never found this bar, and the contour map kind of backs me up. it's more of a gully than a bar. You know, it does seem to be the sort of spot everyone catches from, like this central bit down the lake, but it's the contour map kind of backs up what I pictured in my head anyway. Talking of Eric's, that's done a big one this week, I've seen, or last week.
It has, £47. A fella called Chris Lithgow, that was on a single hook bait, that one.
Yeah, another day ticket lake. I'm going to be doing a bit of timing this year. We spoke about it before, but what a stock in that lake now.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what's in there, but it is not just for the north, for anywhere. That has got a mental stock of big, big fish and a county record.
What? 58 was it or something, the other one, which I mean that could go 60. Yeah. This 47 could be 50 by the end of the year, and I think there's 14, 15, maybe 17 at the right time of year, 40s in there, and shed loads of 30s. It's just ridiculous,
maybe even more the way they're coming through.
Yeah, definitely. What other fishy news have we got?
Well, there's one that did catch me eye from over the other side of the pond, a £40 record common for Arizona State. That was a fella called Bryce Gabriel, but he'll not be claiming a record. This is what I've got down here. Many states in the USA require the fish to be turned over, usually dead, to Park and Wildlife or Fish and Game authorities for certification, inspection, weighing again on certified scales, dissection, and species confirmation.
you can live without your certificate for the state record. Then,
yeah, so
unless you wanted to hold that record forever.
Yeah, so good on Bryce. He's returned the fish alive.
Yes, we obviously have to promote a no-kill policy. I know a lot of Eastern European countries are now, you know, returning fish for somebody else to catch, for the fish to get bigger. They still eat them over there. And I know in America, fish are nuisance, or carp have been nuisance fish, but get them in, you know, they give much more pleasure for many, many years if them fish get bigger.
Yeah, imagine if they get really, really accepted as a sport fish like the bass and everything else over there.
There'll be a few tackle companies looking to capitalise on that, I guess, if carp fishing goes really big over there.
Yeah, I think there already is one or two.
Yeah, we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Once again, hello.
Yeah, we did.
Hello to our American visitors, and I like Arizona State as well because our first ever band at college was called Arizona.
Any reason? Have you ever been?
I don't know. It just sounded foreign and cool, I think. Sure. I remember paying this guy £50 to he was on the art course to design. Kind of a poster logo for us, and it was a very detailed picture of something in Arizona. I can't really remember now, but it was about Arizona. And we were called that for many years.
No, I've never told you about my band experience as a young lad, have I?
No,
we didn't get very far. We didn't get beyond the pub, to be honest. It was all ideas.
You didn't do gigs in the pub, no?
No. No, we did have that one fellow who was playing guitar. He did a tape with a load of riffs on, and most of them were good, to be honest. And I called one of them a bit cheesy. He got monk on and left.
we got chased out of a pub when we were like sort of 17 at college. We got a gig in this biker's pub. It was actually run by the landlady that all the bikers kissed their ass. And as most bands are, we're too loud for a little pub, and she must have told us about five times to turn it down. But it's pretty difficult to turn it down in the pub when you've got a live drummer who's a bit like Animal from the Muppets. He's smashing them drums really loud, so obviously you have to turn up the amps to like hear yourself over the top of them, and there's like a minimum volume you can have for a live band. It's just not possible to go any quieter. And, you know, we thought we were kind of on this minimum level, but the landlady disagreed, and we ended up, she ended up pulling the plug on us halfway through the night. And then it kicks off, obviously, and we had to, you've never seen a drummer pack a drum kit up so fast anyway. So hot-tailed it down the road. I'm sure we left some stuff and never went back for it either. We have a few on the road stories from my band days, but for another show.
Is that when you had your long hair and you were in your full Dave Mustaine lookalike era?
Yeah, I was Dave Mustaine's double, the guitarist from Megadeth, originally Metallica. It was good times. I sort of played guitar for a living in a band for over 10 years, I would say. We had a more commercial sort of money band after that, and then used to tour Europe, do all the army bases and stuff. For those of you that don't know, many years, it was in the Rodney Meadow days, actually. I had a pretty great life then. We used to gig sort of four nights a week, five at busier times a year, which were all sort of weekends, and I would drop the girls singers off on the Sunday night when we'd returned from our last gig, usually like 3 a.m. or something. Had a big transit van, all the equipment lived in the back. I'd pick my fishing gear up from Watford, and I'd be straight to Rodney Meadow, and that'd be me till Thursday morning, basically, on the lake. You know, as usual, the regulars on the lake, you always get to fish midweek, but I literally never slept a single night in my own bed. We were on the road for like four nights, and then fishing for three nights. I'd be back in the house, have a shower, and then same routine week in, week out.
That does sound like fun.
Yeah, it was good, it was great. It's always that sort of excitement of turning up 3-4 o'clock in the morning, wandering around, see if the best peg's free, bang, straight in the point or whatever peg it was, and hold up for 4 days. Yeah, I was living the dream back then. Yeah. How times have changed.
No, it's all work and no play now for you.
Yeah, I've got to read, unfortunately. You can't. There's a few less responsibilities when you're younger.
I know that, although I remember, although not quite up playing in a band, but the very session I finally got the twin out of pit two, the night before I got down there, although my wife, a couple of friends at Rock City watching Murder Dolls and Stone Sour play. My friend took my wife home, I had the van to the tackle, and drove from Nottingham straight down to the lake. And we're walking around there in the pitch black, ears ringing. It's a long story, but a couple of days after, I finally got the one. Very memorable.
There's so many times that I've been in my real hardcore carp fishing phases, and then my weekend, you know, after I left the band, I was DJ sort of clubs and bars and stuff, you know, usually city centre, busy places, 1,000 people, 1,500 capacity venues, you know, with queues outside, falling, just it going off, the hairs on the back of your neck standing up. And like 24 hours before, you were sat on a muddy lake, you know, like hardcore carp hunting, and it used to be so surreal, like and every week was like this for 10 years plus. You know, you're kind of at the weekend absolutely living the dream, stood in a club, you know, wasted or DJing, and you know, then Sunday night back out on the lake doing like the absolute polar opposite. Ali Hamidi, I mean, everyone used to think it was weird, like, how can you sit there on the fishing bank all week when you do this at the weekends, and kind of vice versa. Ali Hamidi summed it up when we had him on, like, carp fishing is kind of like that anyway, because you go from peace and serenity to absolute chaos when that buzzer rips. Like, you still get that kind of polar opposites, don't you? Because, you know, as soon as that buzzer goes, your adrenaline's flying, you're rushing out your bivvy, falling over stuff on the way, you know. Then you get a battle, which is, you know, high pressure, your blood's pumping and you want to land that fish. And, you know, once everything's dealt with, the fish is back in the lake, the rods are out, it's kind of back to chilling again, which is how my life was midweek to weekends. It was exactly the same, really.
Yeah, I know. I was working on the taxi drivers, which I did for almost 9 years. I'd have four, you know, 10, 11, 12-hour night shifts. I'd finish Sunday around midnight. Then it was pizza, get jacked up on coffee and straight down to the lake.
Yeah, I used to love those Sunday night drives down after working, you know, finishing DJing like 2, 3 in the morning, then a drive down to whatever lake I was fishing, getting there first light and, you know, ready for a three nights on the bank. Usually it was exciting.
Oh, I tell you what, that reminds me of one. Don't know if you can remember it. It's you in the reeds on pit one. You're on the phone to me early hours. This is, the sun's just coming up, probably around 4 o'clock. I'm on my way down the A1, sticking to the speed limit, obviously.
Yeah.
But you're telling me about all these fish, absolutely pretending the dolphins out from the point swim just behind you.
Yeah,
and I just needed to be at that lake. It was just exciting, just getting there. I remember rightly, you had something like 6:30s that session because they all went back in the reeds as soon as I nodded the point up. But
did you not catch one straight away?
I lost one straight away.
Ah, right, I remember.
And then they all went back in the reeds, and you had it off. I was playing photographer for the session.
This is must be before I got declared persona non grata on that lake. And you.
Yeah, well, I think we had a share of the fish first.
Yeah, we'll maybe go into that one another day. There's a few things I'd like to get off my chest, but...
Yeah, I tell you what, for Elsto, have you ever looked it on Google Earth lately?
No.
Do it. It has changed so much since we were there. The reeds are no longer looked to have any reeds in.
Wow.
The water level has dropped. The floods on pit two are no longer the floods. It's just like a bare white clay bank.
Back to a high bank again.
Yeah. It used to be called the White Cliffs.
How's it lost the water then? I mean, it was just filling up every year. Have they drained it?
I believe they have drained it, yeah.
Right. Because it was going to get too much, I guess.
Yeah. Or I don't know if linear run Elsto would have done it, or would it have been something to do with the backfilling company who were next door, whether it was threatening their setup.
Right, yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. We keep going off at tangents. Shall we move on?
We can do. What are we on to next? The top trumps.
Yep, let's get on to big carp top trumps.
We've got two fish. They've got a north and a south. They are both over 50, and they are both relatively young, up-and-coming fish, which can... Well, one has done a massive weight already. And the fish that could really, really do good things in the future we've got for the south is the tiger fish, one of the crackers from Gary Bay's Lake, Bayswater, in the Syndicate. And up north, we're going for the bigger. We've got three scale, which is a monster in Eric's Willows.
Okay, who's getting which one?
Ooh, go on, which one do you want?
I don't know anything about either of them, so I'm going to take the southern one.
You're going to go for Bayswater.
Yeah,
tigerfish. Okay, that means if you don't know anything about either, I'm just going to lie and win.
Okay, so at this point, it's a bit like the Top Trumps card game. We have five categories, which are weight, looks, the fight, the difficulty of capture, and the merit of capture. We score them from 1 to 10.
Yeah.
We score the fish from 1 to 10 in each category. We add them up at the end and see which fish beat which fish. Eric's fish, what's its biggest weight?
Its biggest weight was a stonking 58 plus.
Wow, we know that. We spoke about it before, but what a fish for the north. It's jet black. We'll move on to for the looks, I guess. The biggest weight of the tiger fish, I believe, is 51.6.
Yep. That's what I've got. I've done my research for this for a change.
Okay. Are you keeping score then? Have you got a pen?
I haven't. No. Have you? I thought you were the cast abacus.
So at £58, the Willow's Fish 3 scale obviously takes the first prize on that one.
£58,
we've got to give that a 9, haven't we?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have gone for a 10 there, mate. That is. It's not just big for the North, it's big nationally.
Okay, you can have a 10 for that one. I mean, 51 for Bayswater, again for a young fish, it's a big fish.
It's up there. It's not unique being down in Essex, but I'd still give it an 8, I think.
Yeah, I've already written 8 before you said anything, so...
Great minds are thinking alike.
So, looks. The tiger fish, I've seen pictures of it. Shelley's had it, hasn't he?
Yep, he has. There's a video of him on YouTube playing it, which I've got a bit of the information from, to be honest. But the looks of the fish, it's got these great big apple slices along its back, where he gets the name from. Quite a nice deep stocky fish as well.
Yeah, it is a corker, isn't it? We're going to go for an 8?
I think we will.
Oh, the Eric's fish, I mean, it's a massive, deep-bodied, jet-black thing. I think it looks cracking. When I saw the picture of that fish at 58, I was just like, I want to catch that fish.
Yeah, I've got to agree. It's just a great big unit.
Yeah.
There's no... not much in the way of scaling. It's called 3 scale. And that's probably... It's only 3 scales.
Yeah, I think it's the fact it's so black makes it really... attractive to look at. I mean, that was the thing that struck me. Obviously, it's a big fish. I'd want to catch it anyway, but, you know, the thing that was striking to me was the blackness. As for, you know, I wouldn't describe it as pretty, but I would describe it as attractive.
Yeah, it's not like
it. It's like the girl with a nice personality.
Do you know a few?
So, what would you give it?
I think I'd have to go for... I'd give it a 7. Just because it's not as pretty as the tiger fish, but it does have plenty of attributes.
Yeah.
Big old shoulders look good as well. I bet you can't mistake that one when it's swimming through.
It's not quite a 10 to 2.
No, not quite.
Okay, so we'll go 8 for tiger fish and 7 for 3 scales. Fight... I know you've done some research on this. I don't know about either, so I'm going to have to say
I have.
For it.
Well, I got a bit of information from Les Marsh. He had the 3 scale at its previous Yorkshire record of 52, and he describes it as a bit of a plodder.
Yeah, just big, heavy fish aren't they? They're just hard, shake their heads and use their weight as opposed to being crazy.
Pretty much, yeah. That's the way he described it, just plobs up and down and into the net first time.
6, maybe?
Yeah, I think I'd go for a 6.
Okay, and the tiger fish, you've obviously seen Jim Shelley's video of him catching it. I watched that, it looked like a battle to me.
It did. I think he actually described it as a sick fight because, well, Adam Penning had just walked through the bushes, must have seen what was going off, picked Jim Shelley's camera up and just filmed it because you can hear them both on. And there's a few good dirt runs on there from the fish.
What are you saying then, like an 8?
I think it's got to be an 8 up there, yeah.
Okay, it's catching up. And the difficulty of capture. I know the 3 scales is a tricky one. It doesn't seem to come out that regular, does it?
It's not a regular one, no, which is why when it came out at 58, it was a known big fish, just not that big. It was quite a shock when it, nudging £60.
Yeah,
which I'm sure it will do this year if it's caught at the right time.
Yeah, so what would you say, once a year, twice a year?
Yeah, I think once or twice.
Got to get a 7 for that then, what do you think? Maybe an 8?
Oh, I think we'll go for an 8 on that one.
Okay, and tiger fish, I don't have any info on this, I'm sure you do.
It is limited. I did send a message to the lad who did have it at 50 and no reply, unfortunately. Okay. But just going by catch records and what I've seen in the magazines, Bess is not a regular visitor either.
No,
you know, again,
seems to do the autumn capture and the spring capture like a lot of big fish do, and not I don't hear of it much at any other times other than them kind of lump weeks where all the big ones get caught.
Yeah, I think it's a two or three times a year fish.
So we're giving it a seven, maybe?
Yeah, we'll go for a seven. And as with anything on the carp cast, if we're wrong, go on the Facebook or Twitter and put us right.
Yeah, we don't mind the interaction from anybody if you want to tell us how right or wrong, slate us or say nice things. It doesn't really matter.
No, just fit yourself in between Ian McMillan's stalking posts.
And the merit of capture. This is a tricky one, I think, because they're both going to be very similar. I mean, who wouldn't want to catch either fish?
Oh, no, I'd love both.
So, it's got to be eights all round for those two, I think.
I think we're going to go for a double eight, yeah. I mean, you've got the great big willows. You've got the stonking Bayswater fish, both in quite pressured waters. I think willows might be a bit more pressured than Bayswater, but I don't know, I've only ever seen it once, to be honest, and that was, I was down for a do with Nash on the day ticket side.
I'm going to have a recount here because my my maths on the fly is not 100%, but they are coming in at a draw. So I'm going to the 39-point seat, so I'm actually, we're going to have a recount. So Willow's fish, 10, 7, 17, add 6, 23, add 8, 31, add 8, 39. The Bayswater fish, 8 plus 8 plus 8 is 24, plus 7 is 24, plus 7 is, my mind's gone blank, 31, add 8 is 39. It is a tie, 39 each.
So, are we sticking with the draw or do we have a tiebreaker?
I think we'll have to go for the draw.
I think we will. I can't think of a tiebreaker, so let's have a draw.
Top trumps.
Yep. Should we do some more on the net? It must be true. We've got plenty of debates going on.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, we have. And there's one I saw on, this is from Twitter. There's a lad, Ashley Waring, posted a nice trophy shot, but it was a brace shot. He's holding a fish and the other one's at his knees. And it was, I can't remember exactly what he said, but I believe Ian Russell was tagged in the tweet, who made comments that those sort of shots are not a good idea.
Yeah, they're frowned upon these days, the brace shots. I mean, for people that don't know, maybe less experienced, if you're holding a carp for a photograph and you've got another carp by your knees and the one by your knees starts flapping and trying to get off, what are you going to do with the one that's in your hands? That's the theory behind it. There's lots. I mean, one of the most classic pictures of all time was a brace shot. From
Peter Springate.
Yeah, many years ago. You can probably name the fish as well.
He's got two famous. There's the two Yovni fish, or you've got Mary and Mary's mate.
Yeah, I mean, iconic pictures, although in today's, politically correct scene, probably not, probably shouldn't happen. I know the defence of this particular picture was there was quite a few people around, but even so, if somebody's facing, they're not in control of the fish. The fish can do itself some damage if it gets onto, I don't know what the surrounding floor is, but a lot of pegs are stony and who knows. Like, it's, you're not in control of that fish if it's just laying the floor by your knees. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. In defence of the kid, he did say there was people either side and if they're in the slips, so to speak. But even still, I don't want to do it. I have done it in the past, I'll be honest.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Nowadays, I wouldn't. I just want to. I mean, most of my fit pictures are self takes anyway, so it's not even a consideration. Brace shots.
Yeah, it's funny though. I mean, when you see a row on Facebook or Twitter, you get just people that want to argue. They jump in on it, and it's especially when it comes to putting somebody down. Especially someone that's obviously been successful, caught some fish or whatever. You then get the trolls that they're just up for. Holier than thou, and nobody's perfect in anything, but people seem to think that being the holier than thou on the internet is, it's like almost elitist. Oh, how can you do that? They make themselves feel better by putting other people down.
Yeah. Did you see a post that Chris Avery made on Facebook yesterday?
No.
Slating Zig captures, basically saying that they don't count.
Oh, apples, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I did see that. Yeah, I mean, he does troll deliberately to get a bite on Facebook, so you never quite know if he's serious or if he's just looking for a reaction, because he does do that on a regular basis.
He does, yeah. Do you think he just sits at home waiting for his little notification thing to light up and gets all excited?
It's just keyboard angling, isn't it? So he's trying to...
Oh, he's good at it.
Although this particular one, I mean, it's... You know, it's not an opinion that I couldn't be convinced to think the same. So he might not be trolling in this one. We'll never know. But it's funny reading the comments. I mean, that's where you see, you know, some people just clearly shouldn't know how to write.
It is one of those things. The way he was coming across, whether it was trolling or not, it was putting down other people's captures that they are rightfully proud of, whether you like Ziggs or not. I've used them, I've caught the odd one. I can't say I'm a massive fan of them, but I'll never put anyone down for using them because I know how good they are.
Yeah, man, there was an epic trolling thread this week on Kevin Nash's page as well, on his Kevin Nash Carp Angler page. He's made a post about a bait that seems to be controversial. We mentioned, in fact, on Carpcast 1, if you haven't heard it, we have Kevin Nash as the guest, and he does go into detail about this bait, the key. For those that don't know, it's essentially a bait using very high nutritional value ingredients, and anyone who used to make their own bait in the 80s and 90s, as I did, will know that was when the original HMV craze was about. I mean, we were obsessed with trying to get it above 80% nutritional value. That was it was the protein content. So there was all these ingredients, sodium caseinate and casein, and they were all pretty expensive to buy as individual ingredients. I had loads of recipes for them, and whether they caught me more or not, I don't know. I always caught well. You know, when the fish meal craze, it kind of halved the price of bait, and we all still caught as much or more. We know that fish meal does have lots of protein, good stuff in it, but, you know, it was brought down to like a 50-50 mix, maybe 60%. Anyway, the key is gone back to, Kev believes that certain baits select bigger fish. Now, I totally agree with that. I've had those experiences. You know, I said on that podcast, the NutriBaits Trigger always caught me bigger fish, but it caught me less than whatever I used on the other rod. So I know for a fact that certain baits do catch select bigger fish, and, you know, if you want to argue with me about that, you can, but, you know, 30 years of carp fishing experience has taught me that. Like Ziggs tend to catch the smaller carp, although big carp do come on them, but, you know, certain lakes, Essex Manor being one that's big on Ziggs, none of the big ones come off the foam. We know how many big ones there are in there. It's generally 30s when you catch Zig fish, but you can have hits on there. Yes, there's always the exception to the rule every now and again when the big one slips up on the Zig, but it's uncommon. And I used to find it with fake corn. You know, I was fishing fake corn on the wire. I might get 5 takes on the corn and 2 on the boilies, but the 2 biggest fish would be on the boilies. But I'd catch more, but it'd be all the 20s on the fake corn. So fish do... I don't know if it's something about the bigger ones, they're a bit wiser, but anyway, Kev believes that the HMV baits might catch you less, but they'll select the better fish. It's a choice. You know, you can buy it or not. He's also suggesting you don't need to use much of it. And a lot of people are trolling him, saying, oh, you know, you're making a bait that's twice the price of all the other baits, or significantly more expensive. And so it's just a marketing ploy. And he's saying, don't buy as much of it. And they've also done the cultured hook baits as well, which are quite expensive. But he's saying, you know, they're the old fish then in a stick with as a single hook bait, and it'll outfish other stuff. Whether it's true or not, I don't think, you know, if you're in the business of selling things, doesn't matter if it's fishing equipment or washing machines, you know, you're going to hype your product to the best possible way. In the best possible way, and I don't think you should ever have to defend that. You know, part of being a good businessman is being a good salesman and selling your stuff. He does lots of reasonably priced baits. He's always had a good track record for excellent catching baits. I just don't understand why people want to troll the fact that he's done a bait that's slightly different and it's more choice. You know, people just saying it's an absolute marketing ploy, charge more, give a spiel, and you know, all the carp sheep will follow and buy it. He's been very clear with his explanations as to why that isn't the case. He's explained in great detail why this bait is expensive, and you don't have to use it. You know, they do all the other ones. What do you think?
I think the fact it's 15 quid a kilo is where a lot of the trolling comes from.
It's just the price, yeah. And why should you ever have to defend why you would market something? You know, if you don't market something, you shouldn't be in business. You know, if you're in business of selling things, then sell it as well as you can. But he's not lying. No. You know, I totally understand the HMV. I guess there's a lot of younger carpers that don't understand it because they weren't around when it came around. But if you buy some of the old books, you know, the Hutchie books, I think Martin Clark's first book had loads of recipes in, you know, some were HMV. That stuff isn't cheap. If you buy it, it is more expensive. And I also agree with his thinking that it may select that special fish, you know, the big one in the lake that's really tricky to catch. They're big, they eat. You know, creatures, including us, get wiser as they get older. You'll eat less McDonald's, you know, as a 50-year-old conscious of your health as you would as a, you know, 12-year-old kid. So why would fish be any different or any other animals?
And I think we're going into that thing now. I think with fish, it's a lot more instinct. I don't think you can compare them too much to humans because their brain is about the size of a boilie. We are infinitely more intelligent, yet people still eat crap and still smoke.
Yeah, but every animal, including us and fish, their first thing is survival instinct. You know, that's why that fish spooks when you creep up on it in the margins. You know, the slightest noise, even if it's a close season, they can't be fished for, bang, they're off. You know, every animal has a built-in survival instinct for the race. Otherwise, there wouldn't be those animals anymore. And so it's just logical to think that they know things that are good for them, things that are bad for them. Humans are probably too intelligent for that because they think, oh, if I smoke, I'm not going to die tomorrow, you know, and they don't worry about it until they're 50, 60 and they're, you know, having their lung replaced.
Yeah, or worse.
Or worse, yeah. I spent some time in the cardiac unit in hospital when I punctured my lung, falling off a bike, pretending I was a kid. But, you know, 90% of the people in there were smokers who wished they'd never smoked. And until it's one of those things where until it's too late, you don't really worry about it because it's not killing you instantly. But
yeah, everybody who smokes knows what it can lead to.
They do, but they think it won't happen to them because there's always the 80-year-old granny that's been fine, you know. But there's nothing more proven that smoking kills you, and like, people just don't think about it. There's a slight different fact that it's also addictive, you know, and they maybe want to give up and can't. But take that out of the equation, unless we start putting the crack in boilers, then the carp are not going to get addicted. Although peanuts, they say, were super addictive for carp. That's why they're banned on a lot of lakes. Carp crack.
Yeah. Did you ever use peanuts?
Not heavily. I know people that have. I've used tiger nuts a hell of a lot. Caught probably more fish on tiger nuts than any other bait in my life. I know how devastating they can be when they've been introduced in decent qualities.
I've caught a lot on tigers. I've only ever really used peanuts once. I was when I got a tub of, you know, ready prepared stuff, and it was on pit two. I can't actually remember catching on him. I didn't really give him long enough, to be honest, in such a low stock place. What I can remember is my spod that I put them out with was caked with oil for weeks. The oil off those was unbelievable.
They get very gloopy. We used to make our own back in the day, and you used to have to prepare them at least a week before you went fishing. So you'd get a big bucket of water. They come very shriveled and dried up, don't they? And they go to about 3-4 times the size. Really nice, sort of hard outside, but they would start to ferment, so the water would turn into a thick gloopy syrup after about a week, and you would not use them until that started happening.
Didn't we have to use human grade peanuts as well? Weren't there problems with some of the bird food types?
Not sure. I mean, you know, most particle baits come from animal feed shops. Ones that I've used, from the hemp to the nuts to everything. I'm not really sure, but I wouldn't see why you'd have to use human-grade nuts.
No, it's just something I can vaguely recall reading a long time ago. I mean, I've read that many carp articles over the years.
Going back to the Facebook trolling, so Kev yeah. made a post about the key, came in for a lot of flack, 150 replies, you know, lots of the usual negative trolling, so, which then incited him to make a post called Why Do I Bother? And I've had this conversation with him, and I think we did on the first Carpcast as well. We said, you know, why do you answer the trolls? And he truly believes in what he says. You know, he's a guy that's successful, who brings lots of products out. He doesn't need to just make something up. You know, I've been in that office. They do look at stuff and you know, they genuinely try and come up with things that have an edge, from items to tackle to bait. So he truly believes what he's saying. He explained that he's passionate about Facebook, about interacting with people, and he puts himself up there probably more than anyone. I've never seen a Danny Fairbrass, you know, Facebook post, and various others. I know Ali does a great job of answering people. He's very keen to answer on behalf of the company and himself when if people troll him or anything, he gets stuck in. And a lot of the other company owners do, I suppose, but Kev embraces it. He really does go to town, and you know, the post had nearly 2,000 likes and 260 odd replies, and it shows the power of Facebook. Then I saw people trolling the troll, basically saying, what better way to get attention than to put up a controversial post and let everyone troll it, and then put up another post kind of explaining it. I was just like, when does it stop?
Yeah, there's one thing. Anyone who looks at Facebook and is into the carp fishing knows exactly what the key is and who makes it.
Yeah, but I don't think he's done it for that. I mean, I want to try it from all the stuff that I've read. But, I mean, at the end of the day, your results dictate what you carry on using, and the bait market is very fickle. Like, for an average angler, if he buys a bag of bait from the shop, doesn't catch on it, goes home, he's not buying that bag again, he'll try something different the week after and something different the week after that. You know, it's an extremely fickle market, so the proof is in the pudding. But if you're going to sit there slating it based on price and you think it's just all a marketing ploy, then don't buy it. You know, how many of these people, here's a pet hate of mine, razor blades. Right, 20 quid for 6 blades these days. 24 quid I've seen them at, right, for some, you know, the Gillette top ones. How many of these people are writing into Gillette, you know, trolling their Facebook, going, the price of your razor blades are disgusting. Why, you know, there must be a monopoly on razor blades. I can't understand why something that everybody uses is that expensive. It boils my blood. But
I'm one of them, and I just grow a beard. Yeah. That's my protest.
But, you know, I don't see any of these guys trolling Gillette's site or any other. And I can't imagine the owner of Gillette, you know, coming on there explaining why his blades are so much more expensive than everyone else's. I can't imagine. So it's good that we've got an industry small enough where, you know, the boss men do get involved. But it's, I don't know, I think some people just... There's something about fishing that makes people take everything personally.
Yeah, I don't think it's just fishing, mate. It's everything, and Facebook gives them that platform to whinge and have a go.
And if it didn't, we wouldn't have a section called It's On The Net, It Must Be True.
No, because we're whinging about whingers.
Have you seen anything that's worth a look this week?
Worth a look.
I have, and this is one that you suggested to me a couple of weeks back, and that's Carpology, the magazine, their own website.
Their internet content is brilliant. They are, I think, for kind of informative stuff that grabs me and makes me want to read the article, they've got it nailed, absolutely nailed.
Yeah, I've just got it up in front of me now. I'll strip to the articles page, because I'll be honest, even though I've been at it forever, I'm still a carp geek, and I'm like a sponge still. There's a top article here, what a load of chodswallop. It's when that's avid man, Matt Woods. There's a review on the Whisker DF rods. Are you really hitting the spots? There's another one. You know, whatever you want, it's all in there. Oh, Terry Hearn on clearing areas. And Terry Earn and his fishing, that's one of the things that influenced me to start travelling and trying to chase a few big fish. So even now, anything he writes, I'm going to take notice of.
I like the fact that it's really informative stuff, the kind of myth-busting. So I'm just looking at one now, you know, and it's, does a crosswind affect our baiting? So there's an article, you know, they've obviously got Rob Hughes, who works for Carpology, amongst others, who's been down there diving, looking at spot spills in wind and, you know, seeing how it affects it. But it's always really useful stuff. I remember the one where, which is an age-old debate, is how far behind your marker float does the lead have to land, you know, in certain depths to actually be on the spot. And then they answer those questions factually and, like, in a way that just can't be answered. And, you know, they had that one that I was involved in because of the, you know, the rare fish. Do you remember that one, the rare fish that get away with it? Or the uncatchables, I think they called it, something like that. They named, like, the
banana.
Yeah, the banana common. There was another one in there that they actually got wrong, actually, because they said it had never been caught, the snub nose or the bull.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
But I actually caught that fish, the only ever capture of it, I think. But they're like the impossible ones. But they do, they just, however they do it, yeah, I'm just looking at another one now. Does nicotine put carp off?
And yeah, I was going to mention that one again. That's got to be something that's on people's minds, especially if you smoke and you're handling your hook baits. Are you tainting them?
Yeah, definitely. They actually missed the point of that. It's something that I had an extreme example of. My conclusion on that answer is something that they didn't go into, is that raw tobacco is an absolute repellent. Burnt tobacco, i.e., you know, once you've smoked and the smell on your fingers and the smoke, it doesn't seem to make any difference. But I had an example when I was young, float fishing on the canal with my dad. I was out fishing him quite severely, and he could not get a bite, and I mean zero bites. I was catching them one after the other, a bite of chook, and we tried everything, tried swapping pegs, and he could not get a bite. Now, he smoked a pipe. And one of the routines of smoking a pipe at the time is pushing the tobacco down into the pipe, like compressing it. So he was like pushing down the raw tobacco. Anyway, we tried everything all day to get him a bite, couldn't get him a bite, couldn't work out what it was until I baited up his, I put the maggots on for him on the hook. Because, you know, I was basically in his peg trying to get him a bite, because we couldn't work out why he couldn't get the bite. And it was only when I put the maggots on, he got his first bite. And then we sussed it. So next cast, he put the maggots on with his, you know, tobacco fingers and didn't get a bite. I put it on, got a bite. So it was 100% the raw tobacco on his fingers. So I'm guessing people that, like, make roll-ups and stuff, that if you're handling the raw baccy with your fingers, that could. Yeah. But I don't know if you've ever smoked... you know, if you suck a bit of raw baccy in into your mouth, it's like poison. It's like, you know, it's,
how does it go?
Yeah, any carp cigarette smokers will probably know this, but it's poisonous. Like, it's the most repelling taste you've ever imagined.
Yeah, I've got to assume, though, that cannabis doesn't repel carp, otherwise some of the country's top anglers would never catch anything.
It's been burnt, though, don't forget.
Yeah.
That's my conclusion. I think that the kind of smoky and burnt tobacco doesn't really make... It might make a small edge. I think it's the raw tobacco that's definitely a turn-off. I can't remember what the Carpology conclusion came to. It's been a while since I read it.
Yeah, I'm just... Well, looking at the last sentence of it without reading it all, it says, so no, it doesn't do you any harm in washing your hands before baiting.
No, I mean, I remember Terry Hearn on the 8 League. You know, I've never seen somebody so obsessed with washing their hands, like, after everything, you know, from making brews, going to the toilet. He'd wash his hands in the lake before he touched anything to do with his rigs. And going back to the 1% edges, I mean, Terry was probably the one that said, you know, if every little thing I do doesn't make much of a difference on its own, but I do 10 of them and they each make a 1% difference, I'm 10% better than the guy in the next peg, which is a good way of looking at everything, you know, paying attention to the small details. But yeah, the Carpology website, the Carpology Facebook page, they absolutely nail it with that. And, you know, it's all free. It obviously costs them money to do this stuff, but I cannot say enough how much how good their content is.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that one.
Big Fish Off concluded this week. I've not seen the last episode yet. What's your conclusion on it all?
I enjoyed it, and it's what we've said before. It's exactly what it is. It's entertainment, not technical. It's just there to show fishing in a fun light. And I think they've succeeded.
Yeah, I think they've nailed it. I think they've absolutely nailed it. The final two were Ollie Luck and Dappy and David Seaman as well.
Yeah, I've got Ollie Luck and Dappy was the third one out of the five series. And there was David Seaman and Tommy Hill. And the final one was Scott Maslin and Graham Napier.
Yep. Like I say, I've not seen the last one. I'm assuming they were just as good. I think the backlash on
it was they had a boilie fight, and who's not done that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in the old days, we used to use Black Widows to put boilies out, and they were the only catapult that could get a boilie out to any distance because they're all kind of maggot catapults in the 80s. But yeah, we had a few boilie fights with the Black Widows.
Yeah, that's got a sting.
I think now it's time to bring back, we didn't do it last time, but carp are not sheep.
Carp are not sheep.
And this week's carp are not sheep, we're going to look at something that's been all over everybody's Facebook, is the Diablo.
And I've got one and I think they're great.
Actually, it was a little tenuous link, but the Black Widow catapults at five boilies, there was an equivalent called the Diablo.
I remember that now, yeah. I just clicked as you said it then.
Yeah, they were like the rival. You either had a Black Widow or a Diablo. But yeah, this Diablo is different. It's kind of a metal implement that you can cook toasted sandwiches in, but you can just put them over the top of the most common stoves that we use for cooking on the bank, and you can get all sorts of creations in them. Can you do a pizza in them? I bet you could do slices of pizza, couldn't you?
You could probably do whatever you want. And all I've done with mine so far, being, well, a bit boring, is just two slices of bread, some cooked chicken, and some reggy sauce. But even that, just it takes next to no time. You're just heating it over your stove, flipping it over, opening it periodically just to make sure you've not burnt it. The only thing I would say is watch out you don't burn your fingers on it, because they do get bloody hot. I've made that mistake.
I saw the guy the big one fishing show a couple of years ago, went down there, and the guy that was demonstrating them, he was just making like little toasted sandwiches, all different types for everybody, just giving them away on the stand. He was a real showman as well. We tried to get him at the Northern England show, but I think on the same day it was like the big home show that they have. It's like massive in London. He was at that
Ideal Homes, isn't it?
Ideal Home exhibition, yeah. And we wanted him down because he was really good on the stand, and obviously who doesn't want a free toasted sandwich all day long? Every time we got hungry, he went back to his stand, he'd do his little 10-minute demo. And but they're great. They're super versatile, and it's one carp are not sheep that I might be a sheep on, because I think I'm going to have to get myself one.
Yeah, when we go out for that day's drop shotting, I'll take it along.
Carp and not sheep.
So, it's time to welcome our guest this week. He's famous for his recent YouTube videos. I think they're done in the style of Carl Pilkington, although they deny that was ever deliberate. He's just crazy. So, we'd like to welcome Mr. Mark Pitchers to the Carpcast. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad at all. It's been a while since I bumped into you. I think they're a tackle shop in the Midlands somewhere, I think the last time I saw you.
Yeah, I think that's some open day, wasn't it? Some tackle shop open day last time I saw you.
And before that, you were catching all the carp on Cromwell, I think, as the time I saw you before that.
It's a funny old water, Cromwell, isn't it? It's a proper pressured day ticket water. It's I had a few, and then a few blanks, and you get a few. You know what it's like on them sort of waters.
Yeah, I think when you were on there, you were catching that session. I was struggling.
I remember. Yes.
It's a usual story for me.
Yeah, I remember that. I turned up to do a magazine feature, I think it was. And I remember I got there, and there was only one peg left. Yeah. I think Nathan, the owner, he'd reserved me a swim. Not any particular swim, just a swim. So I had a swim to do the magazine feature in, and I got there, and it was it was about this time of year, maybe it was another couple of weeks into the year, and he said, do you want to go out in the boat, we'll have a little look around, and all I could see was just piles of bait everywhere and not a sign of a carp. It was, I don't know how it happened, but I think a couple of carp must have got lost in the middle of the night. I think I ended up catching a couple that night.
You had one of the good ones as well, I think. You had a 30, didn't
you? Yeah, 31, 32 pound or something. So, yeah, complete miracle, really.
Yeah, I remember that session as well, because I were there with you, Jim. I think I did one night, and I didn't know Nathan too well at that time. He walked into his swim mid-morning. I was like scrabbling behind a can of beer behind the chair I was sat on.
When I saw you on Cromwell, you were actually, was that one of these challenges that you've been doing?
No, that was, God, it was a couple of years ago, that wasn't it? That was for when I did my Traveller series for Crafty Carper. I think it's probably going back about 3 years, that.
Yeah, it's not far off.
That's well, my magazine sort of work began, really, in Crafty, doing that Traveller series. Got me here, there and everywhere up and down the country. It was good. Got to fish some brilliant venues. Really enjoyed it.
You've really put yourself about, I think, especially kind of data kit lakes, you know, accessible lakes for other anglers, you know, the sort of lakes anyone can fish. And you seem very consistent on those sort of lakes. I mean, is it just legwork, as in you're doing it all the time, you just know how to catch carp kind of quickly?
I wouldn't always say quickly. I think you have to get yourself in a almost a different mindset when you're fishing day ticket waters. And although you can't really generalize every day ticket water, I do think there's a lot of similarities you can draw on from one water to another. Obviously, they are so pressured, and I think you need to, well, I always tend to approach it as thinking, no matter what swim I'm turning up in, if it's one of the busy popular day ticket waters, chances are there's already bait in the peg from the previous angler, and they are pressured, and they do move around on, you know, away from pressure. And I don't know, it's just, I think it just require different tactics. I mean, I used to, that session you saw me on, that was just solid bag fishing. So all I was doing was fishing tiny little solid bags. And it's crazy, really, because as I mentioned before, when I went out in the boat and had a look around, there was just piles of bait everywhere that had been put in from previous anglers, just piles of bait, kilos and kilos of bait. And I never even saw any carp. It was only about 4 or 5 feet deep, and it's crystal clear, the water. Yeah. Didn't see any signs of fish, didn't see any signs that fish had been feeding there. And yet this tiny little PVA bag approach, it actually got me 3 bites that session. I think I landed 2 and lost 1 in the weed. But I think maybe it's a bit like when you've sat down, you've had a big Sunday dinner, and you couldn't possibly get another mouthful. But then you see the dessert trolley come past with a little piece of cheesecake or something. You think, oh yeah, go on then. And I think it's that sort of approach that I think is the reason it works well on the day ticket waters, really. It's that little opportunist bait fishing, really.
And then the most recent kind of challenge series you're doing, it's quite comical. You're a pretty funny guy on the YouTube ones that I've been watching. I think the first one I saw was that bait bucket challenge, and I was chuckling all the way through it. I thought the way they'd put it together, and they've obviously done it, you know, kind of similar to that Idiot Abroad. I mean, you're the guy, aren't you?
Well, that was never ever the intention, really. I think the reason it kind of crumbs across that way is there's only just myself and Harry the cameraman there. That's it. It's not a big production or anything like that. It's just me and Harry, and we do get on really, really well, and we kind of know what winds each other up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He knows what will get a reaction out of me, and although I try not to bite a lot of the time, I think I do.
Yeah.
But I think that is the reason it works. But no, there was never any intention to try and, you know, copy it on that sort of style. It's I mean, literally, we'll turn up, we'll meet, and the cameras are on. That's it. It's from the second we meet up, the camera goes on, and everything's recorded just how it actually unfolds. There's no you know, there's no actor. We're not trying to base it on anything. It's just the way it's kind of worked out.
I don't think you could imitate it. You know, Carl Pilkington's quite a unique character, and yeah. unless you're naturally like that, I don't think you could copy it. You have to be that person. I think you are, yeah. you know, because it's quite comical. But like in the bait bucket one, you know, when he sat there and let you tie your rigs up and then told you that you couldn't use them, like deliberately yeah. stitching you up, in, just like Ricky Gervais does to Carl Pilkington. He does. It kind of, whether it's natural, but I think the music's similar as well, isn't it? Quite that kind of light-hearted comedy music in yeah. the background, like and the Marx musings and stuff. It's hilarious. I do like them.
I mean, Harry pulled a similar stunt on this last challenge, episode 6, where I'd gone down to Linear and set up on St. John's. And the lake was frozen when I got there, as were most of the lakes on the complex, actually. And then Roy the bailiff would come round and he said, look, it hasn't done a bite in 6 weeks, St. John's. You're completely wasting your time. Fish are practically dormant. You need to be moved on the B1. And then Harry watched me pack everything away. He watched me pack everything away, load it in the back of the van, and then told me I couldn't move. I mean, who does that?
I'd want to knock him out, I think. You know, the worst bit of fishing is packing up to make you do it when you don't need to. I think I'd have to throw him in.
I always have to load everything very meticulously in my van. I don't just launch it in the van. I pack everything away. I wouldn't call it OCD, but everything has to go in this little proper place. And it takes me a while to load it back up. And he must have just stood there for 10 minutes watching me do it. Oh, cretin.
And then... Have you released details of this challenge yet, or is it edited and out yet?
That went up a few days ago. That's up on YouTube now, episode 6. And that was, it sounds quite easy, but I had to roll my own baits on the bank.
Yeah.
It does sound easy, but it basically, that restricted me then to an out-and-out boilie approach.
Yeah.
Which, at this time of year, it isn't the right tactic. Well, it isn't a tactic I would like to be adopted. I mean, I'm not saying you wouldn't catch on solely boilies, but you know what it's like. You'd rather be there with maggots and a bit of emp and you know, like maybe a bit of particle and pellet or something like that. Or zigs. And that was how I wanted to fish it. But fishing pop-ups, I've always done better on bits of foam, and people argue, well, you could have just rolled little tiny pop-ups, but I don't know, a little tiny 6mm pop-up on a 10-foot hook link, I'm not convinced it would have stayed, you know, buoyant enough to remain out there all night, especially having just rolled it and not give it any air drying or anything.
Yeah.
So, it was a tricky one. I won't say how it panned out, but it was a tricky one.
So who came up with the idea of these challenges? Where did they?
It was Lewis Porter who he sort of devised it all. We didn't really know how it would work. We thought it was quite good concept, but it relied purely on interaction from the public because.
Yeah.
Fox put up their challenge, they ask for a challenge on their Facebook page, and it's up to the public to get behind it and back it and write in with their suggestions. And if they don't do that, then we're knackered, really. We don't have a program to make. But no, thankfully, everyone got behind it pretty much from the word go.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. I mean, you're entertaining, and it makes me chuckle. I've only watched a couple of them, but I mean, the worms in the paint bucket challenge and you're letting the worms go is comedy genius, I think. It's them poor worms.
I don't think what was put on. Was it put on? I genuinely couldn't. I couldn't know the worms.
You should have brought them back up here to me. I'd happily chop them into little pieces.
Oh, I couldn't do it.
So how much do you know beforehand then, like tell us, so from the you know the idea that obviously the public vote on or whatever, and I mean, and yeah. how does it pan out from then onwards?
I do get to find out the challenge you know, pretty much the same time as the as it's selected, because we have a little competition where
yeah
whatever challenge is selected, they win £50 worth of bits and pieces. And they probably find out before I do, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get to find out the challenge, but I don't know the venue. Fox generally select the venue, and I don't find that out until the night before. So there's very little chance for me to prepare for them. Yeah. So yeah, pretty much the night before, I get told I've got to meet wherever. Sometimes it's not even at the venue; it's like a mile or two away, and I don't know where we're going to end up. But I don't know, I enjoy all that side of it, really. It keeps me on my toes, at least.
And so you get to the lake, you know what the challenge is.
Yeah.
And basically Harry, he's just there to kind of throw obstacles in the way, it seems.
Yeah, well, it never kind of started off that way. He's just become meaner as the series has gone on. In the first couple of episodes, he was all for like trying to help me, maybe, but now he goes out of his way to make things more and more difficult.
And what did the Mark's musings, did that kind of come through you just being you, and then they said, let's actually chop this into a section, all the crazy stuff you come out with?
I think so, yeah, because the first one, we had a little bit of a musings, but yeah, I think that is something that has evolved, really. I think the first episode, we filmed all the fishing-related stuff and then maybe stopped the cameras rolling, you know, afterwards. And then I think Harry just thought he was perhaps missing out, or just kept the camera rolling, and now it's pretty much on all the time, really. So, yeah, it's funny how it's evolved, really.
And what started you fishing? I mean, what age were you? Like, how early did you get onto carp fishing?
Well, I mean, I started fishing very young. I was probably 4, maybe 5 year old. I was very, very young when I started fishing. Although it was more, it's a funny story how I got into it. It's a strange story. Mm. I used to just go down the local stream and just catch bullheads. Do you know bullheads? And little brown miller's thumbs. Catch with my hands and what have you. And then I remember I was with my grandparents one day, and we were trying to catch these bullheads in my hands. And then I went into the local village shop to get a net. And then the guy behind the counter said, I think you'll catch more one of these. And he gave me a fishing rod and reel.
Right.
And I was only about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old. And he gave me a fishing rod and reel. And then I didn't even know how to use it, really. And then I spent the next however many years catching, you know, just whatever swam. And it wasn't until the age of, I was 11 years old, that I actually went to try and catch a carp properly. And then first carp I ever caught was 6 pounds, and then it seemed huge, absolutely enormous. It was 6 pounds, it seemed massive. And that was it from there on, pretty much. All I did was carp fish. Although I did have a little bit of a break. I had a little bit of a break. Because what I used to do, I used to fish, I used to be part of a local angling club, and I used to fish the matches, not carp matches, just, you know, with pole and whatever. I used to fish the matches there, and I used to do pretty well, and that actually used to fund my carp fishing.
Right.
All my winnings used to go into buying carp fishing stuff. But I kind of got half decent at match fishing, and when I was 16, I made the England youth team. Then I fished 2 world championships and a home international. So then I had a 2 or 3 year break where I thought, actually, I probably should concentrate on this, you know, at this sort of level. And I had like a 2 or 3 year break from carp fishing. And as soon as I came out of the England youth squad, I pretty much sold everything and went straight back into carp fishing again.
That must have been a proud moment, fishing for England at that sort of age.
Yeah, it's probably the proudest moment of my fishing career, if you want to call it that. It's I remember that day as if it was yesterday when they called my name out and I'd been selected for the squad. I'll never forget that moment. And then actually going out to Italy and fishing the River Po, that whole week, it was just incredible environment. And I think it kind of put me in good stead for whatever fishing can throw at you. I mean, being in that World Championship environment. I mean, people talk about pressure now about having to catch fish for a camera or catch fish for, you know, for filming, but catching fish in a World Championships when the rest of the team depends on you and you've only got a few hours to bring about a result, that I think that really did put me in good stead, really.
I was going to say, it's great practice for the challenges because you kind of have to perform for the camera, don't you? So
yeah. People say, oh, what's the pressure like? And I think, well, not as bad as a World Championship.
And, of course, fellow Fox man, we had him on the show last week. Rob Hughes is now the manager. I mean, the England team. Would you fancy carp match fishing?
No, I really don't like it one bit. I've fished a few of the BCAC matches, and there really are things I look back on fondly. I've never, even ones that I've qualified in and done quite well in, I've loathed every second of being there. It's just not. I mean, I'm not knocking anyone that fishes it. We all go fishing for different reasons. We all get, you know, enjoyment from different aspects of it. Either it's whatever, catching a big one or just getting away from the missus. I don't know. We all go for different reasons. We all enjoy it for different reasons. But it doesn't kind of capture the essence of carp fishing that I, you know, sort of loved for all the years. It's somewhat different. I don't see it as match fishing as I saw match fishing, you know, when I was fishing on with my pole and what have you. And it's not the sort of carp fishing that I know and love. It, I don't know, it kind of doesn't fall into either category for me personally.
No, not for me.
But like I say, we all go fishing for different reasons, and you know, people enjoy it, and that's up to them, isn't it?
Yeah, I did the BCAC once, and we qualified.
Did you enjoy it?
I'm similar to you, really. I'm quite competitive as a person, so
yeah.
I kind of liked wanting to win, but it wasn't carp fishing. You know, it was a totally different situation, removed from, you know, the normal sort of fishing I do. But I'd do it again in the right circumstances. I don't know if I could ever have the, if I want to do it enough to maybe, you know, compete and try and get a spot on the England team or anything like that. You know, it's, there's a lot of better anglers out there at that style of fishing than me. And I think it would, I don't want to do it enough to put the effort in that would be needed to be good, you know, to get good enough.
Yeah, I mean, certain waters that kind of, they have styles. I mean, obviously, like, say, the, you know, your Drayton type waters, and you've got to take your hat off to the people. I mean, I wouldn't stand a chance in any matches like that. I mean, young Harry Charrington, one of the Fox boys, his match results last year were incredible, and he's so good at that style of fishing. I wouldn't be able to even compete. Just the speed in which they can get the fish in, and I don't know, the way they get into the rhythm, and
no sleep. And you've got the fish 48 hours and no sleep, and it's an endurance test as well, I guess, on those sort of lakes. And like the skill is not in catching the fish, because there's stuff full of them. The skill is in how quickly and efficiently you can do it, which is, it's not really, you know, we have the hunting gene in us, don't we, from like how we evolved for hunting for food and stuff. And I think that's why we like fishing. It's like pitting your wits against the fish. And when you're not really pitting your wits against the fish, because there's just thousands of them in front of you, you're just trying to, you know, swing them in faster than the guy to the right of you.
I actually fished a BCAC qualifier last year. I was brought out of retirement and made the fish. Oh God, I hated every second of it. I got a really, really good draw. Picked a peg which I didn't think would win me a qualifier, but for framing, you know, for getting like a top three spot, I thought it was guaranteed one or two bites. I just needed, I felt, two fish to qualify, and that's how it actually happened. And I thought, I can't win. I can definitely get two bites out of it. That's all that's needed. Anyway, so I pushed my bar into the peg, and then there was about 20 mallards, 20 coots, all diving in the swim, coming back with bait in the beak every single time. And it turned out there'd been a guy in the peg 24 hours previous who'd absolutely filled it in, put in about 10k of bait when he left. This was in early April when the fish weren't having it.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, that's it. I haven't even cast out and I know it's ruined.
Mm.
And so luckily I managed to do a bit of a sneaky cast. Not out on my zone or anything, but managed to cast it sort of wind-assisted around the back of an island and managed to get one fish. It was actually a 30-pounder as well, actually.
Oh, wow.
And, I think I came fourth. I had one more fish at a 10-pound. Well, 8-pound, I think I was, off qualifying. But you just think, well, in that sort of situation, your instincts are saying, well, just move. You need to move. It's not you're wasting your time here. You need to move.
Yeah.
And not to be able to do that, to say, right, this is your peg, you're fishing here for 48 hours, when you know, before you've got the rod in the water, you need to move. It's just, it drove me mad. It just drove me insane.
Yeah, if you're not on the fish, especially if it's, depends on how heavily stocked the lake is, I suppose. Like some lakes, there'll be a bulk of fish in one area, but if it's just a heavily stocked runs water, then there's still going to be something in front of you. And I guess you can winkle one out, but depends on the lake. I mean, I'm not used to fishing lakes with loads of fishing. Probably Cranwell's about the heaviest stock lake I've fished in years, and I can blank on there pretty easy. So it's, I don't know, yeah, like I say, it drives you mad. All your instincts are saying, right, I need to be somewhere else, and you can't. So I can imagine just really not enjoying it. You've got lakes now, haven't you? Lake or lakes?
Yeah, I've had it for quite a while. Originally, We dug it, myself and my father dug it, 1994, so yeah, it's nearly 21 years ago we dug it. And it was kind of originally just for me to have somewhere to practice for my match fishing.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And as I came up the England youth team, destocked it and then made it into a little lowish stock cart water. And yeah, they're getting there now. I mean, we've had some major setbacks over the years. We didn't know it at the time, but we lost one or two fish every winter due to otters.
Right.
I just thought they were down to natural causes, but it turns out they were otters. And then one winter, went from losing just one, maybe two fish a winter to losing one or two a day.
Wow.
And we really did suffer quite badly on, with it being there was only 50 fish in there at the time, and to lose one or two a day, it didn't take long for them to, really devastate the place. And typically the fish that were taken were the bigger half, really. But we're back on track now. There's quite a few 30s in there. There's two upper 30s as well, which for the northeast is kind of unheard of, really.
Yeah. Where exactly do you live?
It's near Middlesbrough.
Ah, right. Near
Middlesbrough. So we get it's a fair way north, and it's not the warmest part of the world, is it?
No, to have grown up at 30s in there, that's pretty decent.
And no, they've done well.
Has it helped you kind of having your own lake and the ability to learn the fish's habits like the back of your head? I mean, has that helped you on other lakes? You go, I know they'll be in the corner under the snags on the back of the wind in this conditions on my lake.
Definitely. I mean, I'm very, very lucky in that I'm around water pretty much 365 days of the year. Not always fishing, but I'm around a fishing environment almost every day of the year. And I've been to lakes before that I've never ever seen before. And I think, well, if this was my lake, I know they'd be here. I know they'd be there. The wind's blowing from here. I know they'd be around the back of this little bay, and that's where they'll be. And I've drawn upon that, and it has proven to be the case. But also, just the way watching fish feed, I mean, there's a couple of climbing trees in my lake, and just watching the way fish move around and approach baits, and I don't know, you just learn so much just watching. You learn nothing, you learn far more just watching, observing for hours on end, rather than, perhaps even more so than, actually having the rods in the water.
I always, people have spent a lot of time watching fish in the water, and I'm sure you've experimented with baits and, rigs and stuff where you can see them. How effective do you think our rigs are, and what have you found to kind of, I'm presuming you've you know, sat there with a rig in the water watching them from these trees, and you've looked at how they've reacted to the, you know, to,
yeah, I mean, I don't think in terms of, I think a lot of people worry about fish spooking over rigs. I think the main thing that they spook on is line. That's the thing I see in my lake a lot of the time. It's just the presence of line. Also, my lake's quite small. It's 2.5 acres, so it is highly pressured, really, when you think about the environment that they're in. Yeah. I mean, the small lakes, the fish do come under more angling pressure than larger lakes. I think so, anyway, just because, you know, they can't escape the pressure from where anglers are. They don't have the, you know, them sanctuary areas, them safe areas where they can just go and hide and be away from pressure. They're always, you know, under attack, if you like. But I've seen it in my lake, just where people have been fishing, and once the fish know they're being fished for, they just seem to switch off. They're aware that, you know, there's lines there, they're aware that there's rigs there, and they just switch off, they just don't feed. And as they've reeled in the rods, and as they've closed the gate behind them, the fish have just come in straight away and start feeding within moments. And I don't think that's because of the rigs themselves, I just think it's a whole situation. The lines in the water, any little bit of disturbance, I just think they know that they're being fished for, and they switch off. But in terms of, like, effectiveness of the rigs, all my rigs are the most simple rigs there are. I mean, sort of pop ups more often than not, it's a hinge stiff rig, and bottom baits, it's just a knotless knot. I don't even use any shrink tube over the eye, just a little bit of silicone on the bend of the hook. And I don't know, maybe I am missing chances, but I don't know. I'm not convinced using anything more extravagant and complicated would get me any more fish.
You've just described my two rigs that I use everywhere. So.
I just don't think it would get me any more bites. I mean, I've seen weird things have been up the climbing trees, and I've seen fish that they have feeding areas, and they have rubbing areas and laying up areas and what have you. And there's areas where the fish do spend a lot of time, and they do sort of flank a lot and rub a lot. There's a, let's say, like a sandstone boulder where the fish do rub and flank on a lot of the time. And I dropped a few baits near it just to see how they'd react to it. And from at the top of the tree, one fish came in, and I think it was about, I don't know, 20 baits there, and pretty much just came down at the lot straight away, haul up in one go, 20 baits. And he swam and moved 2 or 3 rod lengths and just spat them all back out. It was like a hamster, really. He had them all in his cheeks and just spat them all back out. He had no interest in eating them. He just didn't want
them baits. To move them.
Yeah. So he just swam and moved them out of the way. But if you had a rig there, you'd have caught that fish.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And do you use zigs much? Are you a big zig person?
Yeah, probably over the course of the year, to be honest, probably account for more fish than any other rig. I mean, it's a strange one with the zigs. I'm not sure that they're actually eating them. I think it's just a curiosity thing. It's almost perhaps a little bit like fly fishing for salmon, where you're trying to provoke a take or something. I'm not sure they're, a lot of the time, they're actually eating them zigs. They can't, obviously they don't have hands. Yeah. So the only way they can tell what that object is suspended in the middle of the water column is to put it in the mouth to see what it is. But it's, well, mega effective, aren't they? And gone are the days where you used to just, like, chuck it out on one rod. That's what I see a lot of people do. Maybe have two rods on the bottom, not catching, I'll chuck one on a zig. And now if I fish zigs, it's on all three rods. You know, if conditions dictate then that you need to fish zigs, then you fish zigs and you do it properly, all three out on a zig. So, yeah, I do use them a lot.
Yeah, it's been a theme in all three carp casts so far, really, that we had Ali Hamidi first, who uses them a lot, and then obviously speaking to Rob Hughes, who... has obviously watched the fish underwater and stuff, and we're kind of coming to the conclusion, and all the anglers that are successful and catch a lot of fish, you know, you're one of those guys that consistently catches, they're all saying the same thing, that zigs are probably more effective than normal fishing, you know, conventional fishing, how we've done it for years. And I'm the guy that sticks the one rod out when nothing's happening, you know. And for the actual rod hours that I've had in the water, I catch every time, you know, and I still don't put all three rods out on zigs and just fish it as my main method. And I don't know, something doesn't feel quite right. Because like I said, I agree with what you said. I don't think they're eating. I think you're just kind of ambushing them as they swim past, which, got, you know, we want that fish on the bank, really, and by hook or by crook, I suppose. But I don't know, I'm still not totally, so, you know, I'm going to fish for him with zigs. I mean, it catches him. But there's an argument for fishing a zig in the kind of middle section of the lake, in an area that you travel through, and having three rods in, you could sit there all year in the same spot and probably catch all the fish in your syndicate. You know, without actually kind of learning anything about the lake. You know, targeting fish, say, on syndicates and trying to catch them fish is sort of learning what they do and where they go to feed and where they go to rub and, you know, all the things you've just kind of mentioned on your lake, just understanding the fish's habits. And I think just banging a zig in the middle and sitting there for a whole season, it kind of takes all that out of it, yet you'll still catch the fish.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It is almost, how can you put it? I suppose in a way it's a bit like lure fishing for them in some respects. Does that sound right? Doesn't really sound right, does it? But I think you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yeah. And it's like, you know, the fun of outwitting the carp is learning everything about it and, you know, as we said, pitting your wits against the fish. And you're kind of still doing that with a zig. I mean, I know on the lakes up here, sort of Manchester way, you know, there are certain periods where they go crazy on the zigs and then they drop to the bottom and, you know, and you can't get a bite on the zig and it's all, they want to feed off the deck. So I'm guessing it's not a, you know, a one-time solution, but if there were 20 target fish in a particular lake and you just sat with three rods on zigs in a common area that they move through, sat there all year in that same peg, you're probably going to catch them all. I think.
Yeah. Obviously, it changes every time. I mean, I'm fishing a water at the moment. I think you fished, haven't you, Mark Bundy's? And
had a couple of winners on there a few years ago.
Yeah, but you've got such a depth to play at. I mean, it's down to I think 65 feet at its deepest. I'm just trying to find what level they're at. It's just, well, it's proven a nightmare for me this winter. I'm really struggling on there.
It's an interesting lake. I fished one night on there, I think, as a guest with Mark when he had a winter ticket. And it's a freaky water. For the listeners that don't know it, it's just stupidly deep. It's a 60-foot deep pit. And it literally a rod length out is, what, 30-foot plus?
Yeah, it just plunges straight down, doesn't it? Yeah, the depth.
And the thing, you know, people probably think we're talking rubbish, but obviously everything's learnt to feed in that depth. You know, the fish and the bird life have adjusted to it. I saw coots picking up, were the coots or tufties? They were tufties.
I've seen tufties pick bait up from 40 foot of water.
Which is unreal. You know, but again, they've learnt to do it because they kind of have to nick our baits. So I have thought about Bundy's loads since the zig craze, and I've often wondered, you know, the fish do drop to those sort of depths to feed because they have to, but has anybody actually hammered it on zigs? Is that a common method on there now?
I mean, this winter it's fished really, really slow. I think people have caught on the bottom and on zigs. Last winter was a bit of an exception. It fished very, very well, but last winter was completely different, wasn't it? I think we had, three frosts all of last winter, which is a stark contrast to what we're having at the moment. But, yeah, I think last winter there was a lot of fish caught on zigs, but there hasn't been any method that's kind of had it away this year. It's been odd fish here and there, just little opportunist moments, kind of typical winter fishing, really. one guy might get a couple of fish, then it won't do a bite for a fortnight. It's, you know, that's the way it's been going.
The winters used to be prolific on there, mainly because of the depth. So obviously the water stays warm for much, you know, a good 6-8 weeks longer when other lakes have switched off. So that December, January period used to be the time on there.
But it's not been the case this winter.
So what's, I presume you're using like adjustable zigs on there, are you, and just varying the depths?
Adjustables, yeah. The it's kind of a new tactic for me, really. I've had to learn from scratch, which is hard for me when I don't know the water. I only joined in November, and the depths didn't bother me. I mean, although a lot of people said, "Oh, what's it like fishing when it's like 65 foot deep?" It doesn't bother me. I mean, the carp are masters of their environment, aren't they? That's the only environment they know, so they'll use it all. They use the top, the middle, and the bottom, so that hasn't really bothered me. But I'm to learn about the lake itself, I'm to learn new tactics, and then compete with anglers that know the lake inside out and the tactic inside out. For me, it's been a real struggle, to be honest.
Yes, it's straight into the deep end, literally.
Yeah.
On all of it. I mean, chatting to Rob last week, I'm sure you've chatted loads with him about his underwater stuff. He's saying, like, kind of the middle third is the optimal zig. You know, it's where the carp spend the majority of their time because of the thermoclines and just the way water works, you know, with the sort of cold water rising, he reckons, and that 4 degree kind of zone at the bottom. So, I mean, if you're fishing the middle third on Bundys, I'm guessing you're fishing, you know, where it's 64, you're kind of fishing anything from like 15 to 45 foot. It's quite a big window to try and find where the carp are, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, the same, but what Rob said there, I was trying to try and break it down into thirds. So I'll either concentrate on the, well, actually, I normally concentrate on the top third or the bottom third. Yeah. I've never really found the middle, you know, a middle sort of region to be that productive. I found it would be either side of it, really. But, well, at the moment, I've not found them to be anywhere. It's so frustrating because, you know, you see fish show and you cast a zig at them and you could be, I don't know, I mean, you think, well, I've seen it in shallow lakes where I remember I was stalking fish in the edge, kind of going a bit on a tangent here, but stalking fish in the edge and they're all sort of suspended. And I dropped a little wagra floating with a suspended bunch of maggots, and I kind of set the float what depth I thought these fish were sat. I could see the bait, I could see the fish, and I dropped it in, and it probably sat about 4 inches, the hook bait sat about 4 inches below the fish. Didn't make any effort at all to go for the hook bait, none whatsoever. So I shallowed it up, what I thought would be right. Anyhow, it was sat probably 2 or 3 inches above them this time. And again, they made no effort at all to look at it. It was like 2 or 3 inches literally above the nose. Floating again, set it, and it landed perfect, like right in front of it, and it came to settle right in front of the mouth, and it sort of opened its mouth. I wouldn't say sucked the bait in, but like inhaled the bait in, struck and caught. And you think, well, I was 2 or 3 inches below it first time, 2 or 3 inches above it the second time. And you think, I've now got like 65 foot to try and work out what depth it has to be. It is a headbanger. It is a headbanger.
So you like changing them every hour or something, just like pulling a bit off?
Yeah, that's how I've been doing it. Yeah, just keep a... I know when I am fishing the zigs, a lot of people, they'll wang it out there, but I think I do it a little bit more methodically than that. I'll make a note of the wraps, I'll fish whatever, I know, one rod at 20, one wraps, one at 20, or, you know, whatever the distance will be. I'll mark that down in my phone, and I'll work from the top of the, from the surface down over with the zig. So I'll pop the zig float up on the surface, then work it back down, and again, I'll make a note. I'll have one fishing, I don't know, 10 foot under, one 12 foot under, one 14 foot under, and every hour I'll either peel line up or drop them down. So I'll then have 3 zigs fished at different depths again. So I'll have three different, completely different depths, and change it around in an hour's time, and try and do it that way, just so you can search as much as possible. And if you do catch on a rod at however many wraps, at least then you've got a note to get it back on that same spot. You're not just kind of chucking it randomly towards the middle, hoping to land on that same area, because you know how tightly they can be shoaled up at this time of year.
And the kind of rap method that everybody uses now, I mean, wow, how that's kind of changed or just made everything more simple.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why we didn't do it.
I know, yeah. We pay stuff up the bank and stuff, you know, we'd always mark
it.
But just having, you know, two bank sticks or whatever you're using in your peg, it's you know, it's proved a lot of people as liars. For yeah, I cast 120 yards. That spot's 100. No, it's not. We've wrapped it now. It's 20 wraps.
Yeah.
You've got a tackle shop as well, haven't you?
I used to have. I had a tackle shop. I sold it. And then I sold it probably about seven, eight years ago. I had that. Sold that. But ran a shop for nearly 10 years in the northeast. Just opened it as a out and out carp shop. I didn't do anything else, just pure carp fishing tackle.
I wonder where the name had come from. You see, carp crazy. It's because you're a bit crazy.
That's the one, carp crazy. But it was really good. But I obviously interfered a lot with my own fishing. But you know, a lot of people's jobs do. It's just the way of the world, really. But I'm not sold out just purely because I had a first daughter was on the way, and I was that busy with the shop. I wanted to have time with my family, really. So that's why I sold it.
And what's your favourite day ticket lake? You seem to be the king of the day ticket lakes. I mean, you've done a bit on Bluebell, haven't you?
That's a tricky question. There's so many good day ticket waters now. I mean, I know years ago I used to always make sure I had a few syndicate tickets, but there's that many good day ticket waters. You could sort of flip between a few and have a really good season. In the winter, I used to always enjoy having a trip over to Ruckley on the Isle of Wight. It felt like I was going on holiday because I had to get on a boat to get there. It felt like I was going on holiday. It's a brilliant, brilliant winter water, and Tim, who runs it down there, he's such a great bloke. And I've caught there in the snow when it's been so cold on the mainland, and then you go over there, it just feels a little bit warmer, and I don't know, it's a superb winter venue.
Why is it fish so well in the winter? Is it the depths or...?
I think it's the depth, the start. There's quite a lot of fish in there. I think there's over 100 fish in, it's about 2 and a bit acres. It's not mega deep. I think it's down to about 12 foot. Obviously, the temperatures are just a little bit warmer down there than back on the mainland. And Tim, the owner, he has bait going in regularly, which I think keeps the fish moving around a lot more. And it's just a brilliant place to go. And the average size is fantastic. The average size is, well, it's over 20 pounds, the average.
Right. And what are the biggest?
There's one 40 pounder, and I think there's a couple sort of high 30s as well. There's quite a good number of 30 pounders in there. And there's also, you know, lots of upper 20s as well. It's a great venue.
I've seen it in the carp talk, like say in the winter, and never even thought about fishing it, but you've stirred an interest. It's handy to know a decent winter place to go, you know, if you just fancy a social one of your pals a summer day ticket water?
Another water like, it's called Green Acres. It's near Peterborough. And for me, it's just, I don't know, it looks like a perfect carp lake, really. It's overgrown. There's loads of inaccessible areas. To the angler, not to the fish. They can get there. But there's loads of little hidey holes and nooks and crannies, lilies and reeds. And there's a lot of sort of walking around, baiting little areas, and then going back and see which spots are being visited, and then setting little traps for them. I don't know, it's just kind of like... I want to say proper carp fishing, but that's not maybe the right term to use. But I think you know what I mean by that. It's there's some big fish in there as well. There's a couple of 40 pounders in there.
Is one of them a common? Did Danny Fairbrass have it on there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think they did it on one of their DVDs or one of their programs. Yeah, I think it was a couple of 40 pound commons. I'm not sure one of them still. So I think there's certainly one 40-pound common in there now, and a mirror of about 47-pound as well. Again, there's a good number of 30s in there. But yeah, that's got to be up there. Just actually, that's what we did on the very first challenge.
Ah, right.
And
where you had to catch on three lead setups.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. Again, that was kind of a little bit annoying because when you get a tactic which is working, you know, the last thing you want to do is have to strip it down and put on a new rig and put on a new new lead setup and everything and try a different spot. I had a 30-pounder on that program as well, actually. But you can see in the video footage, it's a beautiful, beautiful lake. That's got to be up there. It's one of my favourites.
Yeah, I've been down to have a look at it. I actually filmed a DVD on there. I only went there for the day. I didn't really fish. It was just to actually film. But Rich Wilby caught a catfish that slapped him in the face. I don't know if you ever saw the footage of that. But what a carpy lake that was. It was just full of pads. And like you say, it's like, it's kind of like a little island bit, isn't it, around the back that you can't get to. And, I always fancied going back there. Haven't been. Yeah, I didn't know it was now a day ticket because I don't think it was then. I think you just had to get permission to fish it.
I think it's like an exclusive booking type arrangement where I think two or three anglers book at a time. It's right up there as one of my favourites, that one.
What was your favourite challenge, or what was the trickiest, most interesting challenge then?
Trickiest one. I mean, the one we've just had was tricky, just in the fact that the conditions were so grim and I wasn't able to fish it how I would like to fish it. That's going to be up there. I think probably the most frustrating one is the supermarket baits one we did. That's certainly the most frustrating. Just because, supermarket bait, you think, doddle, sweet corn, pepperami. No, wasn't allowed to use any of them. So when we got to the lake, what I didn't know was, again, Fox had selected it. I didn't even know until that morning where we were going, because I was just told to meet in a supermarket car park somewhere in Cambridgeshire, so I didn't even know where we were going. So when I picked all the baits in the supermarket, I still didn't know which lake we were going to. When we got there, it was at Vermoyden Lake on the Fenland Fisheries Complex, and the bottom there was quite sort of, I wouldn't say choddy, but lots of like black smelly stuff on the bottom, not quite a chod, but I don't know. And you think, nice little bright fluoro pop-ups, nice, but no, couldn't use any of that.
No.
And there's people around the lake fishing with bright fluoros, and they're all catching. And it was such a struggle, not being able to fish how you want to fish. But one thing I did get from that problem, though, was I used cap meat in armor mesh. And I got a fish very, very quickly on cat meat.
Yeah.
But I had to change after that. I think the next fish was on, I think it was on chickpeas. But then as soon as daylight came around, it was just such a struggle, such a struggle. But there was fish fizzing all over my spot that day, sheeting up over where I was fishing. But I couldn't get a pickup. Not until later on. But when I did get a fish, it was I was pooping out cat food big time. We obviously wanted the cat food.
I used cat food as a bait when I was young. I used to fish a mare on the Prince Albert ticket up north, and then when we were kids and way before working, I had a paper round and which 7 days graft bought a bag of boilies, really. So money was tight. And cat food, I starved our cat regularly because we used to mix breadcrumb and cat food and make a paste and just mould it around the hook. And it was devastating. There was a postman that used to come down and fish our local lake. He put me onto it one day, just had this bread bag full of this pasty stuff, and I put it on and caught straight away. And it was an instant bait, and they absolutely loved it. I've never used it since. You've just reminded me of it.
It's kind of gone out of fashion, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, I used to use it quite regularly, especially for stalking as well. It used to be a brilliant little stalking bait, just dropping in the edge and I think it just kind of goes out of fashion a bit, doesn't it, really? And then you kind of forget about it. But, yeah, I mean, as a spod mix, they were going mad for it. They must have gone absolutely mad for it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And what's the next one? Selecting a few things to vote?
I mean, I think we'll be filming the next one sometime this month. Fox will be asking for new challenge sometime soon. I mean, some of the challenges, suggestions we're getting, oh, they're brilliant. They are superb. I love reading through some of the suggestions. What did we get last time? One guy wanted me to break my PB 3 times in a session using only pop-ups.
Right.
I mean, my PB stood now for nearly 12 years. I've got to beat you 3 times in 24 hours.
Where was your PB from?
That was Benson from
Blue Bell. Yeah, so yeah. You're not going to beat that, especially once, let alone 3 times.
Yeah, it's 56 and a half pound. It stood for a long time, and I don't know if I'll ever beat it, really. But some of the suggestions we get, they're brilliant. We love reading through them all. Fantastic.
Yeah, well, we've been nearly an hour, so has Mark got any questions or anything we've not covered?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, unless you've got any. What's the daftest suggestion you've had there, Mark, apart from your PB 3 times in a session? There must have been some other funny ones. I know Adam Snowden had a good suggestion, didn't he?
Yeah. Adam wanted me to do the entire session naked.
I knew you were going to say that.
What else? I had another guy wanting me to catch from a river on a zig, but that it had to be in a weir pool and it had to be in flood. But I mean, there's so many suggestions that you think, well, it has to be achievable, you know. I love some of the, you know, the crazy ones, but you know, it has to be achievable somehow, you know. It has to be at least doable. But like I say, some of them are absolutely fantastic.
Have you done any drop shotting this winter?
No,
not into that craze. And Fox obviously big on there.
I tell a lie. I have, actually. I think I had about 5 casts, and I mean, it does seem to be the carpy thing to do, doesn't it, in the winter, to go drop shotting for perch. And yeah, you know, people get a buzz from it. I mean, you can see why. I mean, it's carp fishing's a bit, I don't know. I mean, this winter has been quite a harsh winter, hasn't it, really? So the carp fishing has been slow, and you can see why people do just want to go for a few hours and get, you know, get a bend in the rod. You can see the attraction in it, but I don't know. I'd rather struggle on, really. I went to the River Ebro just before Christmas, and I think I did 4 or 5 casts, caught a 2-pound perch, and then thought, no, I'll quit while I'm ahead. That's it. I'll retire on a high. So yeah, that was my 5 casts of drop shotting.
In the episode 1 of the Carp Cast, we have a section called Carp Are Not Sheep, which is basically ripping apart fads in carp fishing, you know. And the first one was drop shotting for perch. And I've been going around the tackle shops doing some PR for the Northern Angling Show, which hopefully we'll see you at with Fox, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'll be there, yeah.
The tackle shops are saying they're selling 20 drop shotting rods for every carp rod at the minute, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
They're all saying it. They're saying the boom is unreal, and it's probably the first time in years that, you know, normal tackle shops have had money off carp anglers, you know, for like non-carp gear, which is good for the industry, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, like you said, you can certainly see the appeal. I mean, why do you want to go fishing for 24, 48 hours in the cold and the wet and the rain and the snow and the ice and the mud, and when you can just, you know, go drop shotting for a few hours and catch a few fish, walk around with, you know, bare minimum of kit, just a rod and a net and a bucket full of lures or whatever, catch a fish. You can see the appeal. You can definitely see the appeal.
Yeah.
But, you know,
It's a fad. I just thought you might be doing it because Fox have really gone to town on all the equipment. I actually bought, I show them a course fishing nod these days now. I actually bought the ready-made setup that Fox's Rage or something it does. So it's kind of already tied, you know. And I'd never dream of using a ready-tied carp rig. So I'm a drop shotting nod, although I've not been yet.
I'm going to have to take you out and show you how it's done.
So thank you, Mark.
And for trout the other week.
Oh yeah.
They pulled. So I can see the attraction there, at least they pull your arm off, don't they?
Yeah, I've caught trout on it.
You know about it.
Yeah, we had a river. Well, it was like I don't really know what it was. It was back at the Grand Union Canal in East Lothian, Bedfordshire. We used to go down there carp fishing. We found this little pool kind of just in a field at the back of, like, directly behind the canal and almost connected by this little tunnel thing. And we put a float in there and bang, it was trout after trout after trout, which was really weird. The last fish we expected, but blimey, do they fight, you know, and kind of just like float tackle. And we were catching them one after the other. It was just really weird because it was just like, hey,
pull your arm off.
yeah, they were good fun. Really good fun. So we're at the hour mark, so I'd like to say thank you for coming on the Carpcast, and we'll see you very soon at the angling show.
Yep, I'll see you there. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
No worries. Yep. Cheers, Mark.
Yes.
So a big thank you to Mark. Great interview, as they're all turning out to be. I'm really enjoying getting a chance to get in the minds of all the carp anglers. So before we wrap it off, I've noticed the weather warming up. I saw the first guy of the year on his push bike, fully camoed up with, you know, his rods between his legs and carrying on, and that's a sign that the weather's warming up for the spring, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I know it's a time of year because it's the end of the old season. I'm having a little play on the river before I get my proper carping head on. Yeah. This is a sign of things really starting to happen.
It's certainly warming up. Last weekend I drove somewhere and it was 18 degrees in the car all the way down to the Midlands. Wow. And then obviously we got the super frosty night, which happens this time of year, but I think the sun in the day is doing more good than the harm that the, you know, a frosty night does.
Yeah, each day brings out a little bit more daylight.
Yeah, and I think the weather for the coming week, we've looked all over the country, it seems to be kind of like that, doesn't it? Sunny days, high pressure, coolish nights.
Yeah, I mean, pressure for the coming weekend is around the 10-30s, not a great deal of wind. Temperatures looking around the low teens. So I'll just keep an eye on the water and get on the zigs. There's going to be a lot of fish in the upper layers.
Yeah, they're going to be looking to get the heat from the sun at this time of year. And I think it's the next decent new moon. Oh, that's something to talk about. The new moon at the end of March. I forget what date it is. I'm going to look it up now. I think it's like the 18th, somewhere around that. It actually coincides with another kind of big moon feature. I think it was Bernie Loftus that posted it on his Facebook. I'll have a quick look actually while we...
Yeah, I'm having a look. 20th of March, the Friday, is the new moon.
Right. It coincides with like some sort of equinox or... I'm sure it was Bernie Loftus that was posting it up. I'll have a look on his Facebook now.
Well, that's the thing. If any of you are out this Friday or even, you know, the following Saturday and Sunday, you know, and you catch, let us know. Let us know how it performs on this moon, whether it makes a difference, whether you think it makes a difference or
We predicted the last new moon last month. I think it was on the first or second Carpcast, and it went off. Like, there was loads of big fish caught around that time. I think it was the full moon we predicted, and it did all those 50s on the Avenue and stuff. And I've just found this article, actually. The March 20th eclipse will actually be a spring equinox, and it's a super moon.
That's the one.
It's a new moon that's a spring equinox and a super moon and a solar eclipse. So...
the super moon is when it's at its closest to Earth.
Exactly.
If I'm right.
Yeah. So let's predict now that's a day you want to be out fishing, March 20th. So we'll find out. If you have any major results on that day, then get on to us and we'll include it in the next Carpcast.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing the results of that one.